Okay, so since this Shabbos we'll be reading Parshas Yisro, I thought that it would be appropriate to speak about the Isra of Lo Sachmod, which is also included in Hilchos Gezeilah. This is where it's recorded, in Siman Shin Nun Tes. The Rambam has it in Perek Aleph of Hilchos Gezeilah. Elsewhere you find an allusion to a Chamson, somebody who might be in violation of Lo Sachmod in Hilchos Psulei Edus in Choshen Mishpat Siman Lamed Aleph. And also an allusion to somebody tries to be Mekadesh with an object that was obtained in a fashion in which Lo Sachmon may have been violated in Eben Ezer Simen Chav Ches. But the main place where these halakos are recorded is towards the end of Simen Shin Tes, from Sif Tes through the end of the Simen to Sif Yud Beis. So the Psukim say in Parshas Yisro, Lo Sachmon Beis Reyecha, that you should not covet the house of your fellow, Lo Sachmon Eishes Reyecha, you shouldn't covet the wife of your fellow. So in Parshas Yisro, we have the description of Lo Sachmod twice. It says Lo Sachmod twice. And then in Parshas Ve'eschanan, we know that even if the wording is not identical in Yisro and Ve'eschanan, that just as Zocha V'shamor V'divarecha Nemru, so too, whenever there are inconsistent Dibros, we say V'divarecha Nemru. So it's all said in one time. So in Parshas Ve'eschanan, the Torah starts off by saying V'lo Sachmod Eishes Reyecha, and then there's a new Isser which seems to be introduced, which is called V'lo Sisaveh. V'lo Sisaveh Beis Reyecha Sadeo V'avdo V'amasol Shiro V'chamaro V'kosh Shir L'Reyecha. So there appear to be two distinct prohibitions. One is the prohibition of Lo Sachmod Thou Shalt Not Covet, and the other is the prohibition of Lo Sisaveh Thou Shalt Not Desire that which belongs to somebody else. So, practically speaking, how do these prohibitions differ from the prohibition of Gezeilah? What is encompassed within these prohibitions? That's what we're going to discuss today. First, we'll speak about why it made it to the pantheon of the Aseres HaDibros, that the Aseres HaDibros are arguably representative of Kol HaTorah Kula, the Tarya Gmitzos, as Osar Jagon says, and Rashi quotes. So Lo Sachmod must be a very important category. So the Medrash, a lot of Midrashim on Lo Sachmod. You could see them all described in the Torah Shlema, go through them. There's a lot to say on Lo Sachmod. So the Medrash, a lot of Mechiltas. We'll discuss some of the Mechiltas because they help to elucidate the Halacha. The Medrash says, Ha'ober Lo Sachmod Ki'ilu Ober Aseres HaDibros. That since this is the culmination of the Aseres HaDibros, so it teaches you a lesson, that it's last but not least, as they say, to teach you that if you violate Lo Sachmod, it's as if you violated all the Aseres HaDibros, everything. V'cheina amru, and so too, it is said that you have to be very careful about Lo Sachmod, because shekulam tzluyim bo, lemoz ki kol ha-mekayim mitzvah zu, that somebody who fulfills the mitzvah of Lo Sachmod, ki'ilu ki'em kol ha-Torah kula. That if you fulfill this mitzvah, it's as if you have fulfilled the entire Torah. That's why this constitutes the chasima, the conclusion of the Aseres HaDibros. So the Karakemach by Rabbeinu Bachya, in the category, the section entitled Chemda, explains that if somebody is chomed, if you covet what belongs to somebody else, it really goes back to the beginning of the Aseres HaDibros. That Anochi Hashem Elokecha and Lo Sachmod serve as bookends or as supplemental headings for the entirety of the Aseres HaDibros. Because if somebody covets another fellow's possessions, then it's as if they're mevatel the Anochi, that they're indicating that they don't have a bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because if they believed in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge of the world and allocates to everybody what they deserve to get, then a person would not have any kind of a chemda. Then they wouldn't be chome, they wouldn't covet and yearn for another person's possession. So therefore, the two of them go together. So it's a famous question that the Ibn Ezra asks. He says, how can a person be expected there? Every single individual is born as a human being. So how can a human being be expected to repress their machshavos, to repress a yearning that they have for another person's possessions? So the Sefer Chinuch asks the same question. The Sefer Chinuch says, yeah, We're supposed to be in control of our machshavas. Who says you can't be in control of your machshavas? You can be. You have to condition yourself properly, right? That acharei ha'pulos nimshachim alavavos, you have to condition yourself, as the Sefer Chinuch says in many places. But if you condition yourself properly, then you can control your thoughts as well in the proper fashion. So Ibn Ezra says that it's all a question of perspective. He says that it would be like a peasant, a villager, who sees the princess, who sees the daughter of the king passing in his village, and he sees how incredibly beautiful and magnificent and regal she is, so he's not going to yearn for her, he's not going to covet her, because he knows that it's absolutely impossible that he would that he, as a lowly village peasant, would ever be able to marry the princess of the kingdom. He knows that she's completely out of reach. She's completely outside of his grasp. It would be similar, to use the language of the Ibn Ezra, kasher ein adam misaveh lishkov imimo. Just like a person does not have a harbor a desire to have an incestuous relationship with his mother. That just as there's an understanding that certain people are off limits, so there would be this understanding that an individual who belongs to somebody else would be as inaccessible as the princess of the kingdom would be to the village peasant. So that's the perspective that Ibn Ezra says that the Torah is trying to ingrain in everybody. Now it's interesting that the Ibn Ezra asked that question with respect to both Lo Tisaveh and with respect to Lo Sasachmot. The Ibn Ezra, in his Perush to the Torah, was clearly understanding that both of these Isurim could be violated through a person's desire alone, through the person's coveting of another man's wife, another man's possessions, just through the thought process, which is why he asks his Kasha. Now, this is in contrast to the other extreme opinion in the spectrum, which is that of the Smag, the Sefer Mitzvos Gedolos, who's quoted by the Bach. I just last week spent a few days in Paris, so I got to study up a little bit on the history of the great French Rabbanim. So the Smag was one of the, from the period in which rabbinic life in France flourished in the 12th and 13th centuries. It was towards the end of the 13th century in France. After that, the Jews of France were expelled. The beginning of the 14th century, there wasn't really much afterwards, other than southern France, Provence, which just wasn't really part of France at that time anyway. So the Smag, anyway, in his understanding of Los Achmon and Los Isabe, so the Smag understands that it's really Hainu Hach, that they're just two different prohibitions given by the Torah, but they're both violated in the same fashion. They both require a Maisa. That in order to violate both Lo Sisaveh and to violate Lo Sachmod, it requires not only coveting the item, but also obtaining the item. The Bach and Simon Shinna Nuntes brings the Shita of the Smag without appearing to agree with the Shita of the Smag, but then in Simon Shinna and Aleph, the Bach quotes the Shita on his own as being his own understanding of both Lo Sisaveh and Lo Sachmod, that both Isurim are only violated through a Maisa, through a physical action of obtaining the item. But the more commonly accepted Shita is the one that we have recorded here in the Shulchan Aruch, and that's the opinion of the Rambam, which is that Lo Sachmod is only violated when there is a Maisa, when Hifzebo at Shalokul Mimenu, that's Sif Yud over here in Simon Shin and Tes, that's quite based on the Lashon of the Rambam, that a person covets an item so much that they nudge and pester and harass the owner of the item until they obtain the item from that individual. That's a violation of Lo Sachmod. And the understanding of the Rambam is that you pay for the item. We'll discuss that as well. And Lo Sisaveh is violated Kivan Shechoshav Belibo, that as long as the person has the thought process that they have in mind to harass and to badger and to bother the owner of the object until they will be able to obtain the object, then they will already have violated Lo Sisaveh through Makshav alone, as the Shulchan Aruch says at the end of Sif Yud, Ve'ein Tava Ela Belev Bilvad. How do we know that Lo Sachmod is not Belev Bilvad? Chemdo also sounds like it's Belev. So here, the Mechilta brings the Pasuk, Lo Sachmod, Kesef Isahav Aleihem Lo Kachta Loch, since we see from the pasuk regarding the yearning that you shouldn't yearn for the silver and the gold, at the end of the pasuk it says v'lakachtalach. We see the chemda is associated with v'lakachta. It is associated with obtaining the item. So we see that lo sachmon is only violated, says the Mechilta, in the event that you actually obtain the item. So that's how we know that lo sachmon means that you have to, you obtain the item. Some quote pasuk in Yehoshua, in Sefer Yehoshua, bechmadei mekachem, that chemda involves lekicha, that you actually obtain the item, while lo sisava is violated through machshava alone. Now, the Rambam says two things in the Rambam's formulation in Hilchos Gezeila. The Rambam says that it's violated when the item is obtained through purchasing the item, that the owner of the item is badgered and bartered until he sells the item to the coveter, to our violator of Lo Sachmod, and that causes the violation of Lo Sachmod, Al Yudei Maise, as we mentioned. And number one, and number two, the Rambam says that there's no Malkus. And the reason that there's no Malkus is because, why? There's no Maisa, Lav She'en Bo Maisa. So the Ravid asks two kashas on the Rambam. Number one, the Rambam seems to indicate that his that Lo Sachmod is violated almost indiscriminately, that even when there is a fair purchase of the item, and even when the seller would have said, Rotza Ani, he would have said, I'm perfectly willing to sell the item, so that we would not even cancel the sale, meaning that it would be a legitimate, valid sale, because the seller would say, Rotze Ani. The Gemara in Baba Kama indicates that the difference between a chamson and somebody who's not a chamson is whether, when the chamson pays money, is whether or not the seller says, Rotze Ani. So the Rambam doesn't distinguish between his saying Rotze Ani or not saying Rotze Ani, and it seems to indicate that there would always be a violation of Lo Sachmod. So that's the first kasha that the Ravid asks on the Rambam. And the second kasha that the Ravid asks on the Rambam is, how can the Rambam say that the reason why there is no Malkus is when there is because it's a Lav She'en Bo Maisa. Ein Lecha Maisa Gedola Mizo. There's no, according to the Rambam, of course there's a Maisa. He says that Lo Sachmod, maybe Lo Sisava, you could say there's no Maisa, but Lo Sachmod, there's definitely a Maisa, because according to the Rambam, the violation of Lo Sachmod is only when there's a Maisa Lekicha, only when the object is actually obtained. So how can he say that it's a Lav She'en Bo Maisa? Of course it's a Lav She'yesh Bo Maisa. So therefore, the Ravid argues instead that he agrees that there's no Malkus, but he says that the reason why there's no Malkus is because it's a Lav Anitan L'Tashlumin. Because according to the Ravid, Lo Sachmod is only violated when the Lokeach receives the item illicitly. Where it's true he paid money, but the seller didn't say Rotza Ani, so it's an act of Chamas, that the seller was badgered and beaten up and he didn't really want to sell the item, and even though he received money for it, it's still considered to be Chamas, and the sale should be voided and nullified. And in order to do that, that requires that the object be returned. So that's what we call a nav halav anitan litashlumen, according to the Ravid, as opposed to a lav she'ein bo maise. Now, the Minchas Chinuch, in his discussion of the lav of Lo Sachmod, he has a rather long discussion. He says, even the Rambam would agree that Lo Sachmod is violated when money is paid and the seller didn't want to sell the item, didn't say Rotza Ani. I mean, it's difficult to even have the discussion of Rotza Ani, truthfully, within the Rambam, because in Hilchos Mechira, Perek Yud, Halacha Aleph, the Rambam indicates that that the Halacha of Tal Yuv is Zavin Zvine Zvine, that when we say that if a person is pressured to sell something, that the sale is good, the Rambam doesn't really require Rotza Ani ever. He doesn't really require an explicit recitation of Rotza Ani. Just that within the Rambam, the implication is that there are ways in which the seller kind of indicates that he's comfortable selling the item. It's not a question that person who is the lokeach grabs the item as an act of gezel and then throws the money towards the mocher. But the mere fact that the mocher willingly gave over the item and then accepted money for it, or accepted money and then willingly gave over the item, so that itself would indicate a voluntary acquiescence to the sale. But the point is that whether the Rambam ever requires Votza Ani or not, the Rambam clearly is indicating that even though the sale is valid, that a Mekach Kayim is a type of transaction where it's as if Votza Ani was enunciated, where it's a perfectly valid sale, nonetheless, since the seller was pressured into it, it would still be a violation of Lo Sachmod. And the Rambam explains that the problem is that it's a La B'Sheh Ein Bo Maaseh. But the Rambam would presumably agree, says the Minchas Chinuch, that if it was a case of outright chamas, where the item was grabbed and the seller really, you know, and the lokeach just threw money at the seller, but there was no indication of willingness, no implication of rotze ani on the part of the seller, that would also be a violation of lo sachmon, and that the Rambam would have to agree that in that particular case, that it would be a lav nitan l'tashlumin, that this is a lav where there would be an obligation for the money to be repaid that was taken. So he would also agree that in such a case it is a nitan l'heshavon. So why doesn't the Rambam also incorporate that reason as to why it is that there is no malchus? However, within the Ravid itself, though, you can say that if you're going to come to the explanation that the reason there's no malchus is because of the fact that it is a nitan l'tashlumin, so then you can also ask the question that the way that lo sachmon is phrased in the Torah, it's not phrased in a fashion in which it is per se nitan l'tashlumin. The pasuk that says that you have to return an item that was illicitly obtained is beheshiv esegzela. Beheshiv esegzela is a takana for which lab? It's a takana for the lab of lo sigzo. It's not a takana for the lab of lo sachmod. So therefore, maybe that the Shaar HaMelech argues, maybe that shouldn't, according to the Ravid's reasoning, that shouldn't constitute a lav anitan l'tashlumin altogether. The Minchas Chinuch explains within the Rambam that the Rambam can say that in the case where it is a willing sale and there hasn't been any violation in terms of the sale itself, so therefore you can't argue that the sale is really a maisa anyway, so that's why that would be a lav she'ein bo maisa. But if the sale is not valid, so then since there needed to be an obtaining of the item, there is a maisa, and the only reason in that case, well, even according to the Rambam, that there shouldn't be malchus is because it's a lav anitan l'tashlumin. So however you cut it, the Rambam ends up being problematic and the Ravid ends up being problematic. So the Magen Mishnah at least comes to the rescue of the Rambam, and the Magen Mishnah gives an explanation which is then built upon by later Achronim as providing for a fundamental explanation of the nature of the violation of the law of Lo Sachmod. So this is important. The Magen Mishnah kind of creates the framework, but then it's fleshed out more by the subsequent Achronim. So the Magen Mishnah says that since, according to the Rambam, even if there's a willing sale, the person is over be'isser of lo sachmod, even though the mekach is still kayim, and therefore that's why, for example, we wouldn't apply the principle of komil sadavid rachmana, damar rachmana lo abid, the abid lo mehani, the principle of Rava and Maseches Temura over here, because the sale itself is a perfectly valid sale. So we're not going to say that the sale is invalid. What's the problem according to the Rambam then? The entire problem of the Rambam is not the sale. The problem according to the Rambam is the Maise Hafsara, is the needling and the badgering and the bothering of the person who owns the object. That is the Isser itself, the Hishtadlus. The Maise Hishtadlus is the Isser itself. A Maise Hishtadlus, he says, is not a Maise. A Maise is, yes, if I grab an item, that's a Maise, but that's not the nature of the Isser. The nature of the Isser itself is the Hishtadlus. So that's why the Rambam, number one, it doesn't say we're only speaking about, we don't say Rotza Ani, because according to the Rambam, it's perfectly fine to say that the Isser would apply, even if you say Rotza Ani, and that proves that the nature of the Isser is not the transfer of the object. That's not the nature of the Isser. The nature of the Isser is the Haftzara. The nature of the Isser is not how you obtain the object. It's the fact that you're bothering, bothering and badgering the other person. Okay? So then the...
For Sachmod.
It's lo sachmo. The nature of the yisur lo sachmo is the badgering and the bothering of the other person. That's exactly right. Okay? So, according to that, the Eben Ha'azil explains, so this is Zalman Meltzer, and Chaim Ozer explains in the Achi Ezer, and the Slaip Lagon explains in the Birchas HaPeretz, that what the Magen Mishnah is really getting at is that, according to the Rambam, it's not so much that the Yisur is the Hishtadlus itself. Hishtadlus itself, you could say, okay, there are various machinations that maybe you'll define as a Maisa. It's not even the Hishtadlus. It's the Chemda. The Yisur is, in fact, a Maisa B'lev. The Yisur is, you can go back to, fundamentally, there's an agreement with the principle articulated by the Ibn Ezra in his Perush al HaChumash, that the Yisur really is the Chemda. It's just that the obtaining of the object is a shear in the Chemda. That the amount of Chemda that one would have to have or manifest in order to violate the Isser of Lo Sachmod is the amount of Chemda that's accompanied by this degree of Hishtadlus that enables the person to ultimately obtain the Chepetz, okay? Whether it's through Rotsa Ani, whether it's not through Rotsa Ani, it's through an actual obtaining of the Chepetz, and that is simply the shear of Chemda through which one would violate Lo Sachmod. And that's the reason why, according to the Rambam, that it's considered to not be a maiseh, why it's considered to be a lab, she'ein bo maiseh, the hishtadlus, the way that the Slaip Lagon puts it, is that the maiseh hishtadlus is a t'nai in the geder of the aveira of chemda. That it's a condition in order, you can call it a shear of the chemda, you can call it a condition in the amount of the chemda, it's the same idea, that the way in which the Chemda is defined and manifested and materialized is through the actual obtaining of the object. So, according to this, it's not so much according to the Ravid, one can argue that the Isser of Lo Sachmod is along the lines of an Isser of Lo Sigzol, that it is actually a version of the Isser of Lo Sigzol. And we'll see this shortly in Tosos as well, that it's a version of the Isser of Lo Sigzol, and therefore it involves some sort of a Maise. And the reason why there's no Malkus is because, like Gezela, it's a Lav Nitzan L'Tashlum. And in fact, the Heshiv Gezela is speaking directly to the Isser of Lo Sachmod, because it's a version of Lo Sigzol. While according to the Rambam, it's a totally different Isser altogether. It's an Isser of a Chemda, and therefore Heshiv Gezela is not in the same universe as this Isser. And the reason why there's no Malkus is because there is a Lav Sheh Einbo Maise. Okay? And you can argue, based on this, there's a discussion about whether the mocher, the one who sells the object, whether he's over on Lifnei Iver for enabling Lo Sachmod to occur, because had he not given the object, then Lo Sachmod wouldn't occur. The Minchas Chinuch says that the mocher is not over, and that's why he argues that we don't apply the principle of Lo Savid Lo Iavid Lo Mehani, because he says that the mocher didn't do anything wrong. It's only the lokeach who did something wrong. So we can understand that argument better. Not everybody agrees. The Shari Dea is of the opinion that the mocher does violate Lifnei Iver, but the Minchas Chinuch clearly says the mocher doesn't violate any Isser. According to the Rambam, we understand very well why the mocher doesn't violate any Isser, because there's no Lifnei Iver if the Isser that was violated has already been violated by the other person. To say that the Lokeach already violated the Isser through his Chemda. This is just a shear of the Chemda. The Isser is not the obtaining of the object itself. It's just a T'nai, or it's a shear. But the actual Isser is the Chemda itself, and the Mocher is not facilitating the Chemda. The Chemda already happened. So therefore we can understand that if you're not Magdir, it is an Isser Gzela, so we understand why there wouldn't be Lifnei Iver with respect to the mocha. Another possible nafkamina as to whether you understand it as a manifestation of an Issa Gzela or not could be whether it applies to Nachrim. So the Sefer HaChinuch understands as a Dava Pashut that the Issa of Lo Sachmod applies to Nachrim because it's a subcategory of the Yisur of Gezela. And just like Gezela applies to Nachum, so therefore Lo Sachmon applies to Nachum as well. If, on the other hand, you say that the nature of the Yisur is an Yisur Machshava, it's an Yisur of Chemda, as opposed to an Yisur Gezela, so one can argue, we don't find anywhere that this is included within the Zayim Mitzvos B'nei Nach, and maybe Lo Sachmon would only be applicable to a Jew, and it wouldn't be applicable to a Goy. You might actually, on the flip side of the equation, say that this could also be a nafkamina as to whether there is a prohibition of lo sachmod if the recipient or if the person who would suffer, it would be the owner of the object, who would be the one who relinquishes his object, is a non-Jew. Do we say lo sachmod is only one of these special fellowship halachos that apply only to fellow Jews? It's kind of like a special type of added gesture of fellowship to members of the tribe? Or do you say that this is a type of universal rule that should apply to anybody? Well, if it's a part of a lo sigzol, so then it goes to the question of whether gzeilas akum is mutter, gzeilas akum is aser. If it is if it's an iser of chemda, which is an iser midos, so then there's more of an argument to say, well, an iser midos, like we've said in other contexts as well, the Menachas Chinuch has brought this in other contexts, in terms of Geneva, for example, that if it's an iser midos, then there's more of an argument to say that it should apply to everybody, because one has to safeguard their midos with respect to whoever they interact with in order to make sure that the midos remain pristine. So that could also bear on that discussion as well. Pashtus is that the Pasuk seems to only talk about L'Reyecha, but the Prima Gadim in Arachayim, Simon Tuf Reish Dalin, Mishpitzo Zav, Sif Aleph, leaves as a suffix as to whether Lo Sachmon should be applicable to non-Jews as well, meaning applicable in terms of whether it's violated if the owner of the object is not of the Jewish faith. And it could be that he doesn't explain the Tzadim of his suffix, but it could be that this would help to explain the Tzadim of the suffix as well. Now, the Rambam himself is based, this whole idea of Lo Sachmon being violated despite the fact that money is actually being handed over to the owner of the object is all premised upon a discussion in the Gemara in Bava Metzia and Daf Hei Amud Beis. The Gemara there talks about the question of whether somebody is chashed al mamona is chashed al shvuasa. Do we say migo de chashed al mamona chashed al shvuasa, that the fact that a person is considered to be untrustworthy when it comes to mamon means that we can't trust that person when it comes to taking a shvua? So the Gemara brings the following case. The Gemara brings a raya that we wouldn't say this from the shvua of Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, if you have a shomer who says that I will pay for the object, there's an object that got lost. A shomer sucker lost an object. He says he lost the object. He says, don't worry, I'll pay for it, and we'll settle the matter this way, and don't worry. So the Gemara says that we have him take a shavua that the item is not still in his possession. Okay? So the Gemara, then the Gemara asks, well, according to this din of Rav Huna, we don't trust the person. We're afraid that they're only paying for it because they want the object, right? So why is it that we trust the individual to take a shavua? We shouldn't trust the individual to take a shavua because, after all, he's in violation of Lo Sachmod. So the Gemara answers, no, because Lo Sachmod below Demei Mashma Le'inshi, that when it comes to the violation of Lo Sachmod, the people think that it's when they don't hand over money. So therefore, this person at least doesn't think that he's violated Lo Sachmod, and that's why we would trust him to take a Shavua. So the question is, what does that line in the Gemara mean? Does it mean people think Lo Sachmon is not violated when they hand over money, but they're wrong? That would be Pashipshat, right? But they're wrong, but they think so, so therefore we don't consider him to be such a bad guy that he would be untrustworthy. It's just like we say that sometimes when individuals violate Averos, even Averos de Araisa, for which they would get Malkus, and therefore should be Pasal Eidus, we don't Pasal them Eidus if they think that they're not doing the wrong thing. Like the grave diggers who would bury people beyond the Rishon and therefore incur a penalty of Malkus, so they really should be Pasul Eidus, but we say they're not Pasul Eidus because they think that it's really okay what they're doing. So that would be the simple understanding. But Tosfos in Sanhedrin on Daf Kof Hei Amud Beis brings a pshat in which Tosfos says, no, in this particular case, it really what the people think is really correct. That the people think that Lo Sachmon is not violated when they actually purchase the object for money, and guess what? They're 100% correct. So according to Tosos, Lo Sachmon is only violated when the object is mamash stolen. So that leads Tosos in Baba Mitzia to ask a different question. Well, if Lo Sachmon then is exactly identical to Lo Sigzol, why does the Gemara have two different Isurim? It turns out that in the Aseres HaDibros, we thought that Lo Tignov is only describing Gnevas Nefashos, and that we don't really have the Yisur Gzelos Mamon in the Aseres HaDibros. Well, it turns out we do, according to Tosos, because Lo Sachmon is just a different way of saying Lo Sigzol. So why then, says Tosos, do I need both Lo Sigzol and Lo Sachmon in the Torah? So Tosos says, Lavo Allah B'Shnei Lavin. So you get two sets of Malkus, that's all. Or Lavo Allah B'Shnei Mat Lavin. Question as to whether you get, again, with Lo Sachmon, you may not get Malkus, so what's the repercussion or ramification of that it be too Lavin? That's a separate discussion. But Tosus seems to say that you would be over on base Lavin, but otherwise, Gezela and Lo Sachmon are exactly identical. Then, Tosus in Sanhedrin Chopeyam a base, which deals with the notion of Chamsonin, that the Gemara there also says, Chamsonin are only Psulim Midrabanan. Why are they only Psulim Midrabanan? So it's the same exact discussion, because they're giving over money in order to get the object that they're forcing a person to give up. So is that a violation of Lo Sachmon? Is that not a violation of Lo Sachmon? And the Gemara there says that they're not possible Eidus Midaraisa, consistent with the Sugi at the end of Bar Mitzia, because Lo Sachmon Lo Demei Mashmeli and Shi. The Gemara there does say that they're possible Midrabanan, but that's for a separate reason, because what they started to do is take advantage of this halacha, and instead of waiting for the person to agree to give over their object, they would just snatch the object, which would really be almost like a ma'isik zeila, and then give the money after they've snatched the object. So that's when the Chachamim decided to pass them at least on a derabanan level. But on a deraisa level, they started out being completely kashal eidus. So Tosus has exactly the same discussion over here. Isn't there a violation of Lo Sachmon? Or, you know, wouldn't there be a problem? So Tosos says, the first answer Tosos gives is no, because the people are correct in thinking that Lo Sachmon is not violated when money is given over. And then Tosos, in the second answer, says more along the lines of the Ravid, that no, Lo Sachmon, the people think Lo Sachmon is not violated when money is given over, but really Lo Sachmon is violated when money is given over, when the Mocher has not said Rotza Ani. But Tosos in neither of the answers goes so far as the Rambam to indicate that Lo Sachmon would be violated even in a scenario in which it would be a Rotza Ani type circumstance. Which, as I said, the whole thing is a little bit difficult to read within the Rambam. Everybody assumes that since the Ravid insisted that the Rambam should have said it's only when the person didn't say Rotza Ani, that the Rambam is alluding to a case even where they did say Rotza Ani, which, as I pointed out, is difficult since the Rambam never requires Rotza Ani. But the Rambam at least indicates that even if there is a completely willing and perfectly voluntary sale at the end of the day, Rambam doesn't distinguish to indicate Lo Sachmon wouldn't be violated. So therefore, we can assume within the Rambam that Lo Sachmon would be violated even in such a case. So we have three shitos then within Lo Sachmon. We have the shita of Tosfos. It indicates Lo Sachmon is identical to Lo Sigzol, which means that it's only violated when there's an outright theft and there's no money given over, period. That's the first day in Tosfos and Sanhedrin Chof Hei Amud Beis, and that's the assumption of Tosfos in Baba Metzia when Tosfos says that Lavo Allah B'Shnei Lavin, that the reason why we have both Lo Sachmon and Lo Sigzol is Lavo Allah B'Shnei Lavin. Then we have the Shita of the Ravid that Lo Sachmon is in fact only violated when money is given over. Everybody holds that when there's Gzela, there's also a violation of Lo Sachmon as well. The question is whether Lo Sachmon is exclusively limited to such a case. So the Ravid says that even when money is given over, as long as the Mocha didn't say Rotza Ani, and the Rambam says that Lo Sachmon applies when money is given over, even in the case where the mocher was perfectly willing and content at the end of the day, after being pressured and badgered to give over the item. There is a fourth possibility, according to the Smag. If you look at the Shita of the Smag in Lavin Simen Lavin Kufnun Ches, so the Smag doesn't mention anything about money whatsoever. The Smag, in his formulation of a Losach mode, seems to potentially accept the approach of Tosfos, that Losach mode below Dume Mashbele Inshi means that the people are correct. The Losach mode is not violated if money is given over, and only when money is not given over, but gets out of the kasha of Tosfos, who says, well, if so, Losach mode is identical to Losigzel, and why do I need both? And then Tosfos had to say, well, Labo, Lab, Bishnei, Labin. So the Smag seems to have, and the one who points this out is Bitzel HaChokma. The Sefer Bitzel HaChokma by Bezalel Stern has a number of tshuvos regarding Losach mode. They're all quoted in the short section that the Pesachei Choshen has in Hilchos Gezeila on the subject of Losach mode and the worthwhile reading. I put a couple of them on the Marim Mekomos. Bitzel HaChokma was the older brother of the Debetzin HaRov, of Rav Moshe Stern, who lived in Borough Park. And guess where he lived? The Bitzel HaChokma. He lived in Australia, of all places, interestingly. So he writes a lot on this topic, and he quotes the Smag, and he's the one who really points this out, that the Smag reformulates the Rambam and says that Losach mode is violated in the following case, when the person who wants the object pressures and badgers the owner of the object to give it to him as a matana. In other words, see, the pressure is that the object should be given as a matana. So it is below Demay, but it's not the same thing as Losigzel. It's not stealing it from him. He's just badgering the person to give it to him as a matana. So Losach mode, in fact, would not be violated if money was given over, but it's also not limited to a case of Gezela. There is a category of Losach mode covered by the Torah that's not simply Lavo Allah Bishnei Lavin, that's only Losach mode and is not Losigzel, namely when the mocher is pressured, the owner of the object is pressured to give over the object as a matana. So according to the Smag, Losach mode is only in that circumstance. So that leads to the following question, which is, if you don't hold like the Smag, and as far as I know, nobody else holds like the Smag, certainly Shulchan Aruch doesn't hold like the Smag. Shulchan Aruch is talking about something where there's an actual purchase, right? Achilochu mimenu, he purchased the object from the individual who owned the object. So according to that, do we say that according to the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, Losach mode is only violated in that type of a case where the object is actually purchased? Or do we say that even according to that shita, if at the end of the day, the owner of the object gave over the object as a matana, that would also be a violation of Losach mode? So that's a big question. We'll discuss that in a little bit. However, according to the Smag, it's not a question at all. According to the Smag, the Iker violation of Losach mode would only be in a case of a matana, because if money was handed over, so then there wouldn't be a violation of Losach mode at all. So now let's just turn momentarily to Los Isabe, because that's sort of the flip side, or it's the supplementary Isser, or complementary Isser, of Losach mode. How complementary is it? So the Magen Mishnah has, as we mentioned, there are three different deos as to whether Los Isabe, whether both Losach mode and Los Isabe are only b'makshava, whether both of them are only b'maisa, or whether one is violated b'makshava and one b'maisa, which is how we hold. So Los Isabe is violated b'makshava alone. So the Magen Mishnah says, well, according to the Shita of the Ravid doesn't tell you anything about what he thinks about Los Isabe. The Magen Mishnah says, well, according to the Ravid, that you only violate Losach mode if the item is purchased by the lokeach from the unwilling seller, where the seller does not end up saying rotsa'ani. So you have to say shechiyuv ataiber zuhi sheyisave liknos bedomim shelo beratzon habaolin. That the nature of lotis of the taiber for which one would violate lotisave is that the person would have a desire and a plan, a scheme, if you will, to purchase the item with money against the will of the Baalim. That it has to be, it has to coincide, there has to be some sort of a plan that is concocted by the coveting individual as to how they are going to obtain the object in a fashion that would be in violation of Lo Sachmod. Okay? And the Ben Ish Chai has a Sefer of Brachos, and in that Sefer of Brachos he has a section on Lo Sachmod, and he has a little bit of a discussion about what this is all about. Why is it that there has to be this whole scheme that's put into place? In other words, the Magen Mishnah doesn't say, oh, well, the taiva for which you would violate is that you have a taiva that you want this object. No. You have to have a taiva where you have a scheme as to how you're going to go about purchasing this object against the will of the owner. So he says that, well, when you think about it, the whole concept of lo sisabe doesn't really seem to fit into the framework of the normal mitzvahs of the Torah. Normally we say, somebody has an evil makshava, they're not culpable for that evil makshava. The Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Mem indicates that the only potential exception in terms of Yisurim to that would be Avodah Zarah. However, absent of Avodah Zarah, we don't really find that a person would be held culpable for their makshava alone. So therefore, he says that that's why the Ravid assumes that we're not talking about just a fleeting makshava, where the person just thinks to themselves, oh, I really would like to have that object. We're speaking about a whole scheme that the individual puts into place. It's not just like a straying thought that is mixed together with all kinds of other random thoughts. It is that the person really sits down and they scheme out programmatically how they're going to come to badger and bother the owner of the item in order to be able to obtain the item. So therefore, the same way that the Magen Mishnah assumed that for the Ravid, Lo Sisabe has to correspond to Lo Sachmod, the same would be true with respect to the Rambam, and hence the same would be true according to the Shulchan Aruch as well, that the Isser, and the way he phrases it, the Ein Isser Kim Heichad Hu Misabe Achepetz, that it would have to be that the person puts a full-fledged scheme into place how he's going to badger and bother this person until he finally is able to convince and to cajole the individual into selling him the chepetz. But there would have to be that very sophisticated thought process in place in order for there to be a violation of Lo Sisabe. And in fact, that's the way that's expressed in the Lashon of the Shulchan Aruch as well. Kol shechashav believe, kimen shechashav believo. This is based on the Lashon of the Rambam. Kimen shechashav believo, ech yikne davar zeh. That he has to actually think in his heart, how am I going to go about convincing the person to sell this item? And he has to have this whole thought out process in his heart as to how he's going to effectuate his plan. Only then is there a violation of Lo Sisabe. It happens, the Rambam in the Sefer Mitzvos, he points out, is not quite as effusive in his language. He says, okay, it was Mekatzer in one place, it was Marich in the other place, but that certainly is the formulation and that we adopt Halacha L'maisa as well. Similarly, the Aruch HaShulchan adopts this, the Halacha, and points it out as well. And he brings a Raya, an interesting Raya, from when the Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar really wanted meat very badly. This is not from Mishach, this is from Be'aloscha, and they're described as Ha'am Hamisavim, where the Lashon that's used is Hamisavim, which is akin to Lo Sisabe, and there they clearly took tremendous measures in order to bring about Gunor Lahamsi to Abasam, in order to be able to bring their desires to materialization. There was a whole effort, there was a whole movement, there was a whole scheme that they put into place, so therefore the Aruch HaShulchan brings that as a further raya for this notion. Interestingly, the Aruch HaShulchan adds something, and I didn't see this anywhere else, and I wonder about it, truthfully, based on the comment that was made by the Rav Brachos, based on the comment that was made, even the Kasha of the Ibn Ezra and the Sefer HaChinuch, that the Aruch HaShulchan says, however, Zamidas Chasidus, he says, there would still be a Midas Chasidus, lo lachmod klal afidu b'leiv. not to have any kind of chemda for another person's object, even if there is no scheme that is attached to it, even if there is no plan that has been hatched in one's mind, how they're going to obtain the object. Nonetheless, he thinks that there still would, at the very least, be a midas chasidus not to have even a scintilla of a thought process. I guess it makes sense. Why shouldn't there be such a midas chasidus? One's not punished, presumably, for not observing a midas chasidus. But it's interesting that he mentions that. I'm not exactly sure where he gets it from. I guess in terms of just the spirit of where the halacha, where this mitzvah is coming from. So therefore, anyway, as a result of this analysis, the Ben Ishkai concludes that if the thought process is a legitimate scheming thought process, meaning that the thought process in your head is only, oh, there's an object that this person has. The person has a house, for example, and it's like your dream house. This is the house that you really want. And your thought process is not how you're going to cajole and bother and badger him and trick him into selling the house. But your thought process is, oh, if the day should come that he should ever put his house on the market, then I would want to buy the house. So that's a perfectly legitimate thought process, because there's no badgering or bothering or plan for badgering or bothering that goes into that scheme, and therefore there would be no violation in that case. Similarly, the poskim say that if there's a person is a store owner and they have objects for sale in their store, and you're thinking to yourself, how am I going to go into the store and buy the object? Obviously, that's not a problem, because the person has already broadcasted that they are putting this item for sale and that they want the item to be for sale. It would be problematic, the Shevet HaLevi, as the Tshuva in Chelekei of the Shevet HaLevi, in the Kuntres HaMitzvos, he has a Tshuva in which he says it would be a problem if you walked into a store and the store owner said, and you wanted a certain object, and it's perfectly legitimate when you were thinking you wanted the object, when you announced that you want the object, all of that is perfectly good. But then, at the moment that the store owner says, oh, this object isn't for sale right now, so then he's changed the identity of that object from an object that is on sale to just like an object that you would see in a private person's house, and then all the rules of Lo Tisabe and Lo Sakmon would be applicable to such a situation. So then the Rav Brachos goes further, and he makes, yes? Rav Brachos. Yeah, the Ben Ishchai. So then he's mechadish the following, which is really not his own chiddush. It's from the Shari Tshuva in Chelek Gimel Simen Mem Gimel, which is kind of interesting because he doesn't quote the Shari Tshuva. The Shari Tshuva says this. He says that if the person who wants the object is an Adam Gadol Mechubad, where he wouldn't have to hatch a far-fetched scheme or a very sophisticated plan in order to convince someone to give them the object, but just because of their inherent prestige, if they would announce to somebody, oh, I'm interested in this object, then the person would automatically give it over because they would feel so overwhelmed by the prominence and the prestige of this individual. They would feel intimidated. So then, even if there is no hishtadlus, and even if it is just a fleeting, you know, idea, oh, I'd like to just ask the person for this object and I'm not going to pressure them or anything else, that itself can already constitute a violation of Lo Sisabe, if there's the thought of asking, and Lo Sakmon, even if the person is just asking and they're not going to badger or bother, that itself can pressure the individual into selling the object. He brings a raya from the Gemara in Suvas Nun Gimel Amud Aleph, with the mice of a papa in Yehuda Bar-Meremar, where a papa was marrying off his son to the daughter of another person, and he asked Yehuda Bar-Meremar, who is apparently a very powerful person, to accompany him. It's like the godfather, I guess, to accompany him to this other individual, his future mechutan's home, so that he would help him with the negotiation. And Yehuda Bar Meremer said, I don't want to go because I don't want to pressure the other person, and just my very presence would pressure the other person. And sure enough, Bar Papa told Yehuda Bar Meremer he didn't have a choice. He had to follow him, and Yehuda kind of forced him to come with him. And Yehuda Bar Meremer sat there and tried to keep a poker face during the negotiations, but the father of the Kala-to-be looked at Yehuda Bar Meremer and felt, oh, the godfather disapproves with that poker face of his, so he kept on increasing the amount of the Nedunya over and over, and finally looked at Yehuda Bar Meremer and says, is there nothing that will satisfy you? And Yehuda Bar Maimah said, well, if you would have asked me, I wouldn't have agreed to anything. That just goes to show how some, with some individuals, the mere presence, or even if they just whisper something, that can cause a tremendous amount of intimidation and pressure. So if a person is an Adam Mechubad of that sort, so then the threshold is much, much lower. And that's what Rabbeinu Yonah says as well, in terms of what would violate the Isser, either in terms of a Lo Sakman context and Lo Sisave, as we pointed out from the Magid Mishnah, and the Rav Brachos always directly corresponds to whatever is the threshold of Lo Sakman. Now, if you look at the Sma, in Simen Shin Nun Tes, so the Sma is Medayek over here, that in Sif Katan Yud Zayin, that from the Lashon of the Shulchan Aruch, the Hiftzibo Ad Shidlocho, so says the Sma, wait a second, that's not the Sma that I want, I apologize, Sif Yukatan Yudches, where the Sma quotes from the Rambam, where the Rambam says, V'chein ko koyotze, that lo sachman applies to all items, midvarim, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote this Lashon, but he quotes from the Rambam, that what type of item does Lo Sakhmon apply to? So he says, the Rambam says, Midvarim she'efshar liknosan mimenu, that it's any item that he has the ability to acquire from him. So it has to be something that is capable of acquisition. Okay? Now, the Lashon of the Torah used the Lashon of efshar liknosan when it came to Lo Sakhmon, and efshar liknosan when it came to Lo Sisaveh, which is a very difficult distinction. And the Prisha and the Sma, in the Prisha, he doesn't have that here in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, but when he was explaining why the Torah used the Lashon of Efshar Liknosan and E'efshar Liknosan, here he just points out that he quotes the Torah over here as well, within the Rambam, that the Torah also has the Lashon of E'efshar Liknosan without distinguishing between Lo Sakhman and Lo Sisaveh. There he suggests a possible distinction between Lo Sakhman and Lo Sisaveh, why it would be Efshar Liknosan with respect to Lo Sakhman and Efshar or Liknosan when it comes to Lo Sisaveh. In both cases, he says, everyone agrees that Lo Sakhmod only applies to an object that could conceivably be obtained. However, you might use the Lashon of Efshar Liknosan when it comes to Lo Sakhmod to show that even if the Mocher has lots and lots of properties, and you don't have to really even think about how you're going to obtain it, because it's clear that with a little bit of pressure, you'll be able to pressure the Mocher into selling one of his properties, so you might skip over Lo Sisaveh threshold. You don't need to put a scheme into place, you're still going to violate Lo Sakhmod. And in the Lo Sisaveh context, you're more likely to be talking about an Efshar case, where the Mocher only has one house, and you're going to have to work really, really hard to convince him to sell that one house, or that one field, or that one courtyard. So in that case, where you're going to have to, you know, think about a really, really elaborate plan in order to convince him to sell it. So there we use the Lashon of Efshar, just meaning you're going to have to work much harder to get him to sell it, and then you're much more likely to violate Lo Sisaveh. But you could conceivably have a case where you just know that with some pressure you'll be able to get the person to sell it, so you don't even have to think about it, in which case you'll go straight to Lo Sakhmod without necessarily even having violated Lo Sisaveh at all. There are others as well who try to come up with different case scenarios where you might potentially violate Lo Sakhmod without violating Lo Sisaveh. I came across an article by our own Rabbi Flug where he quoted a Sefer, Mayan HaChokma, which I didn't have a chance to look at the Sefer inside, suggesting that maybe if you plot to obtain an item on behalf of somebody else, so then when you pressure the person into selling it, you violate Lo Sakhmon, but your thought process, since you yourself didn't desire the object for yourself, so maybe you didn't violate Lo Sisaveh. That's a big question. The Betzel HaChokma talks about that. He says that ultimately, if you wanted the object, even if you wanted it so you could give it to somebody else, the Maaseh, you wanted it, so the same Yisurim should conceivably be in place, but there could be some scenarios where you would have Lo Sakmon and you wouldn't have Lo Sisabe. The other question that's asked on the Rambam, and this really broaches a different topic, which relates to the Eishes Chaveiro. Remember that in the Aseres HaDibros, we start off with Lo Sakmo and Eishes Chaveiro, right? The Eishes Reyecha. That you may not covet the wife of Reyecha. So this is kind of interesting as well for a number of reasons. First of all, the Rambam doesn't include the case of Eishes Reyecha in his description of Lo Sakmod, only in his description of Lo Sisabe. And that's interesting, especially given that the Torah itself utilizes the prohibition of Lo Sakmod specifically with respect to Eishes Reyecha. And so too the Shulchan Aruch, when talking about Chemda, talks about Abdo, or Amaso, or Beso, or Kalev, Shokaveiro, or Kol Davar She'efsha She'ikneu Mimenu. Shulchan Aruch does say Kol Davar She'efsha She'ikneu Mimenu, and like the Rambam. And then when it comes to Misave, the Shulchan Aruch says, Kom Misave, Beso, O Ishto, the Kalev Shokaveiro. Somehow Ishto is only included in Los Isabe. So the question is, what happened to Los Achmon with respect to the Isha? So the Sma gives the answer that when it comes to other items, like items that a person might typically sell, so it's much easier to put pressure for a person to sell their furniture, or to sell their house, or to sell their courtyard to you, or to sell their dishes to you because you really like their dishes. Those are things that a person is more likely to part company with. It's much more difficult to get a person to give up their wife. So therefore, since according to the Rambam, in order to violate Lo Sakmon, you have to actually obtain the item. You can't violate Lo Sakmon without obtaining the item. So therefore, even though it is possible, if you succeed in persuading a person to divorce their wife so that you could marry the wife, you would violate Lo Sakmon. It's just much less likely to happen. And therefore, in the context of a wife, a person is much more likely to violate Lo Sisabe than they are to violate Lo Sakmon. And that's the reason why the case of the wife is listed under Lo Tisabe alone in the Shulchan Aruch. But there's a bigger kasha. I don't know that this is a kasha that I've seen anybody ask, but if the violation of Lo Sakmon requires Shikneo Mimenu, that you're going to buy the object from the person, and in fact that's the Lashon of the Mechilta. Mechilta says all of these things, Beso, Shoro, Amoso, and Abdo, Vachamoro, these are all Mahaprat Dover, Hakone Umakne. These are all things that are bought and sold, Akol Dover, Hakone Umakne. These are the objects to which Lo Sakmon would apply. So for that reason, for example, the Aruch HaShulchan writes that if it was something that it's not sold, like your friend is in possession of just knowledge as to how to do a particular malacha, or he knows a certain chokmah, he knows how to play the piano, and you pressure him to teach you how to play the piano, since that's just like a chokmah, and it's not an object, which is davar hakone umakne, so therefore one would not violate Lo Sakmod in pressuring a person to do an act or to teach a profession or something like that. There's a tshuva that I saw quoted from a Yisrael Yaakov Fisher, who in the Sheol Tshuva is Eben Yisrael, where he applies the same thing. If you pressure someone to provide a kidney donation, so he says that's not really something which we allow to just be sold in the normal course. That's, and a person doesn't really own their organs, therefore it's more considered like they're doing an action, they're performing a service, so therefore Lo Sakmon wouldn't apply to a case of pressuring somebody to give up their kidney. Interesting case scenario. So if that's the case, so I just have to ask the question, what does it mean then for Lo Sakmon to apply to somebody's wife altogether? A person can't sell their wife to somebody else. So how then, if it has to be something that is an object that can be sold, so in what way then does the Torah say that Lo Sakmod applies, and even in terms of what it primarily applies, it's the very first thing that the Torah records, right? Or at least the Torah It starts off in Parshas Vayeskonim, recording Lo Sakman Eishes Reacha, Parshas Yisrael. There's one Lo Sakman Base Reacha, and then the next Lo Sakman is Eishes Reacha. It seems to be pretty prominent in terms of how we understand the Yisrael of Lo Sakman. So what does it mean? So the Megillah Sefer in Lavin Kuf Nun Ches says, if you want an example of how Lo Sakman is violated with respect to a wife, that would be the story in Maseches Gittin Daf Nun Ches. Anybody remember the story in Maseches Gittin Daf Nun Ches, the Shulya Denagri? This was one of the events that caused the sealing, this was the event, that caused the sealing of the verdict for the Chorban Bayis Rishon, right? That there was a Chorban Bayis, the Shulya Denagri, there was an apprentice who said, he was learning from his master, who was a carpenter, the carpenter trade. He was his apprentice, and he took a liking to the master's wife. And somehow, because the master needed some money, and he loaned him some money, and he took the wife as collateral, strange story. He told the master that the wife had not been faithful to him, and that the master should divorce his wife. He got his teacher to divorce his wife. And then he married the wife instead, and the master ended up being the slave of the apprentice, and ended up being his butler, and that he would serve food to his former wife and to his student. His tears would spill on the dishes, and that's the story that the Gemara tells, and this is what brought about, this is what finally sealed the din for the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. And the Megillah Sefer says, this is an example of Lo Sisave and Lo Sakmon when it comes to somebody's wife. But still, it wasn't in the context of a kinyan. It's still not in the context of a kinyan. So here, I was thinking that maybe it depends how you understand your kinyan kiddushin altogether, which is that maybe this can be understood in light of the Ran to Nedarim, which is always quoted a number of places by the Avnei Miluim, that the way in which the kinyan kiddushin takes place is that the woman is mafkir herself, so that the husband can make a maisa kinyan on the wife. So maybe the fact that the first husband gave a get to his wife and caused her to be in this state of hefka, where she could make herself available for the second man the same way that she made herself available as like from hefker for the first husband, and this is considered the maisa kinyan when it comes to the transfer of a wife from one person to another person for purposes of violating a lo sakhmud. So that's what I thought might be a possible explanation. I don't haven't seen this anywhere else. I'm just trying to give a possible beer as to how we understand Lo Sakmon in this context. According to what the Aruch HaShulchan said, that Chachma Malacha will not be subject to Lo Sakmon, one has to think about what about a job. That is one individual who covets another individual's job, and then they make all kinds of machinations and plans as to how they're going to obtain the job from the other person. So you can argue as well, a job is not something that the job holder has the ability to sell to anybody else, unless you're a senator from Illinois. Generally speaking, jobs are not the things that are subject to kinyan. So according to the Aruch HaShulchan, it would seem that even if somebody engaged in those types of machinations, it probably, I'm going on a limb, I haven't seen anyone discuss it, probably would not be a violation of Lo Sakman. It would be a violation of other things. We'll get to this maybe if we discuss Hasagas Gvul, of Yored L'chayev Shel Chaveiro, Yored L'umna Shel Chaveiro, and so forth. But in terms of Lo Sakman, it could be that it would not be included based on this argument. Now, the Aruch HaShulchan also brings the Michilta, that says, Ma'aprat, meaning the various specific items that are enumerated with respect to Lo Sakmon, Ma'aprat mefurish b'dava sheh enoba b'shuscha ela b'ratzon ha-ba'alim. It only comes into your possession through the desire of the ba'alim to transfer it to you. Afko dava sheyef sheh levolav b'shuscha ela b'ratzon ha-ba'alim. So too, that which you crave has to be something which the owner has control over, as opposed to that the owner, that the person is the head of a household, has a daughter, and you want to marry that daughter. So then that's not considered to be Lo Sakmon, because you're not taking the daughter from him. The daughter is her own independent person, and she can decide whether to marry you or not. So therefore, that's not a violation of Lo Sakmon. Now, he seems to indicate the Chiddush, even if it would be Bito Ketana, that the father could marry off, since when she's a Gedola, she's no longer in his Rishus, so then he thought Lo Sakmon shouldn't apply on that basis. Wasn't sure exactly if that was so obvious based on the fact that right now the Ketana is within his Rishus, but nonetheless, that's what he says. Now, the Chofetz Chaim says something very interesting in a Sefer Mitzvos HaKatzer. He says that when a person is negotiating a nidunya for themselves, they're getting married, and there's a certain nidunya that has already been promised by the future in-laws, and now he puts pressure, apparently this was a common occurrence, he puts pressure on the in-laws to give him more money, to give he says, okay, it's very nice, you're going to pay me, you're going to take care of us for the first 2 years that I'll be learning in Kolel, but where do you expect us to live? You never promised anything about an apartment, you have to buy us an apartment. And starts to put a lot of pressure along these lines, this Maisim Koyom. So the Chafetz Chaim says, this is a violation of a Lo Sachmo to putting that type of pressure. So the Sefer B'Tzeil HaChochma asks the question, but is that obvious? Isn't this a case where it's not a mekach per se, where there is a transaction taking place where money's being handed over for something here? The chassan, a future chassan, is essentially asking for a matana. And is it clear, if you don't know that the essence of the isser is matana like the smag, is it clear, certainly it's not clear from the Lashon Shulchan Aruch, is it clear that Lo Sachmon even applies to a scenario of matana? Now the Pesachei Choshen says he's not so convinced that the case of the Chafetz Chaim really is a case of matana. Maybe marriage really is a transaction both ways and so forth, the way marriage works. You give a little, you get a little. He doesn't think that it's so pashut that this should be defined as matana, that we can derive from the Chafetz Chaim, that he's embracing the notion that Lo Sachmon applies to matana, but he gets into that discussion. So he says, even if you take the Chafetz Chaim out of the picture, so who holds that matana would be a problem within a problem of Lo Sachmon? So the Ben Ish Chai says he thinks it's a kol shekein. If even when you give over money, it's a problem of Lo Sachmon, so kol shekein, it should be a problem if you're not giving over money. And let's say it's not exactly the same as gzeila. Even if it would be gzeila, Shulchan Aruch says whenever you violate gzeila, you also violate Lo Sachmon. So he thinks that it's kind of yesh b'chlam masai money, if you will, that for sure that should also be included within the issur of Lo Sachmon. The Sefer Eretz Tzvi, quoted by the B'Tzeil HaChochma, quotes the Imre Emes, the Gera Rebbe, as saying that he thought not so. He thought that it only applies to Mecher, but does not apply to Matana. However, Rabbeinu Yonah, in his case scenario of the Adam Mechubad, who shouldn't even ask for something because they'll just be intimidated into giving it to him, clearly is anticipating that Lo Sachmon would apply even in the context of Matana. So the Imre Emes thought that was meant merely as a Midas Chasidus. As a Midas Chasidus, you should avoid it even in the context of Matana, but otherwise, he thought that, strictly speaking, the din of Lo Sachmon only applies to Mecher. Why? What would be the Svara? What would be the Svara, asked the B'Tzeil HaChochma, not to apply it to Matana? So he says the Svara might be as follows. If I say that the whole idea of Lo Sachmon is that it's a shir in Chemda, that really the violation is Chemda, so maybe one only violates that shir of Chemda when one is prepared in the event that they're not able to obtain the item through any other means, they're prepared to even give over money for the item. But if the person isn't prepared to give over money for the item, and they would only go so far as to ask for it as a matana, but if they don't get it as a matana, they're not going to be prepared to pay for it, so then they don't have the sufficient level of teshuka. They don't have the sufficient level of passion that would be mechayev them in the amount of chemda that they have for this object. It would not be considered to be a sufficient shear of chemda if they wouldn't be prepared to go all out and even pay money for the object if their teshuka didn't reach that level. So that's what he suggests as a possible reason to be mechalek. But since there appear to be eminent authorities, certainly the Smag and arguably the Chafetz Chaim and the simple reading of Rabbeinu Yonah that would indicate that Lo Sachmon applies to Matana, it's appropriate for one to be machmir even in the context of Matana. Now, what's considered to be Haftsara when you talk about the whole Isser of Lo Sachmon, Sashir in the Chemda of how much desire you have is manifested by your badgering and pestering of the person, how much pestering is considered to be pestering? So he writes, the Sefer B'Tzeil HaChochma Siman Mem Gimel, that if you look at the Lashon of the Rambam, who talks about v'hichbid alav reyim, that you really put a lot of pressure, you get all your friends to speak to the person about selling the item and so forth. So he says that whenever we have a notion of being mafzir, of really exhorting somebody, of really going after somebody, generally speaking, that requires gimel pa'amim. We have that in the context of Geneva Stas that we discussed in Simon Reish Kof Ches, where being mafzir means at least gimel pa'amim. So he thinks that if you ask one time, or you ask even two times, then it wouldn't be a violation of lo sachman, unless, of course, you're dealing with an adam mechubad, which is a different story. But otherwise, if the person is not an adam mechubad, so then he thinks that one or two times would not be a problem. And certainly, it wouldn't be a problem if you went to somebody because you really wanted to buy their house, or they had this dream object, first piece of furniture that you always wanted, and you say to the person, is that for sale? And then the person says no, so that's the, and then you don't ask any further or do anything any further, and you didn't contemplate doing anything any further. So then you haven't violated lo sisavin, you haven't violated lo sachmon, as long as you're not Yehuda Bamaremer, intimidating type of personality. So you could, the Piskei Choshen says explicitly that you would be allowed to ask if a certain item is for sale along those lines. So the last thing I wanted to discuss is the Zohar, famous Zohar, with respect to Lo Sachmod. So the Zohar says that there's a psik by a few of the lows in the of the negative commandments in the Aseres Adivros, in the second set of Luchos, that says Lo Tirtzach, Lo Sinaf, Lo Tignov. So there's a psik after the lo indicating sometimes it is okay to be tirtzach. Sometimes you can kill, namely if it's Misas Bezdin. Sometimes tinaf is okay if it's your own wife, whatever that means. Sometimes tignov is okay if you're dying on a case and you're trying to figure out how to fool a ramai, a deceitful person, into divulging the truth or whatever. However, or you're trying to devise a way to teach a rebbe, to teach you a Torah, whatever. But when it comes to lo sachmo, there's no psik. It's interesting. It's actually no psik. So then by lo sane as well. So therefore, it would seem to admit of no exception. However, the Zohar continues and says, even though it would seem to admit of no exception, since we see that the items that are listed in lo sachmo are abdo, amaso, shoro, v'chamoro, things that are mundane. Therefore, we see lo sachmo only applies to things that are mundane, and not to chimuda da'araisa. When it comes to Torah, kinasofim ta'bechokma, there is no problem of lo sachmod. What does this mean? What does it mean? If I envy the Torah that somebody else has, so then there's no lo sachmod. But if I envy something else that a person has, there is lo sachmod. It would seem that lo sachmod is only applicable with respect to your wanting a very specific object, and that if you obtain that object, the other person won't have it anymore. That's not true if I envy a person's Torah. Similarly, the Malbim says as well, on Sefer Dvarim, the Malbim says, if I say, oh, I wish I could be as rich as this person, that would be a violation of Lo Sachmo. But there too, you're not craving a specific item that you're going to actually obtain from the person. So what's going on over here? In fact, the Mechilta Derashbi says explicitly, Yachol, Lo yomar lavai eni keino. I might think that a person can't say, oh, I wish that my eye was as nice as this person's eye. Lavai sari kisaro. I wish that I had hair that was as full and as rich as this person's hair. Tamaloma shoro vachamoro. That's why the Torah says no. It has to be like shomo vachamoro vamaso beso sadeu. Ma'elu miyuchadim dvarim she'ef shalem lavo takas yadecha. Only things that could come into your hands, v'chaveyocha chaseyvan, and then they will be taken away from your chaver. Af eli elo dava she'ef shalom lavo takas yadecha v'chaveyocha chaseyvan. So only lo sachmon only applies to this domain of things. So therefore, how could I possibly say that under normal circumstances it would be some sort of a violation to say, oh, I wish that I was as wealthy as this person, I wish that I had a house that was like that house, if you are not craving this specific item or making efforts to obtain this specific item? It happens that there is a pasuk in Mishle, in Perek Vav, Chafei, says, Al tachmo yafya bil vavecha, that you shouldn't have chemda for a particular woman to say, oh, I want to marry a woman who looks just like that woman. But apipashtus, that would seem to be a midas chasidus, or a divrei kabbalah, I should say, not midas chasidus. That's a divrei kabbalah as opposed to an explanation of what lo sachmon really means. That's when it comes to a woman, so then we have a special category. We have a special category there that we say that you're not allowed to have chemda to look at a woman and say, oh, I want to marry a woman who looks exactly like that. I heard from a shekel once, it's okay to say, based on the Zohar, so you could say maybe this is what the Zohar is getting at, that at least with respect to that Divrei Kabbalah, but of course the Zohar is not going in a Divrei Kabbalah, at least with respect to that Divrei Kabbalah, you could say, oh, I want to marry a woman who has midos that are just as good as the midos of this woman, because that's like a chimuda de araisa, that's a davar shel mitzvah. But you can't say to yourself, oh, I want to marry a woman who's as nice looking as this woman. That's very important. In the shidduch scene, when you ask people what they're looking for, it's improper for people to say, oh, I want to marry a woman who looks like that married woman. So that's improper. That's at least improper as a matter of divrei kabbalah, even if that's not the meaning of lo sachmon on a d'oraisa level. But what is the Zohar getting to? If the Zohar is not getting to that divrei kabbalah notion, what is the Zohar? What is the Zohar getting to? So one possible explanation that I thought of originally is that maybe it means that normally you're not allowed to ask a person to give you something that belongs to them. So, but here you would be allowed to pressure a person if they, you know, that they have a lot of Torah. You can pressure them to teach you their Torah, to take time. Even though you'll be taking time away from other Torah that they can learn and so forth, so maybe that's chaseven on some level, but you can pressure them to teach you Torah. You can bother them and badger them to teach you Torah and so forth. All that is a very nice pshat, but it doesn't really work according to the Aruch HaShulchan, because according to the Aruch HaShulchan, asking a person to give over their chokhmah, even for money, would never be a violation of Lo Sachmon, unless you say this Zohar doesn't necessarily have to be in agreement with that chiddush of the Aruch HaShulchan. Maybe that's a chiddush. That's one possible pshat. So if you reject that, another possible pshat could be the Tolda Shmuel, which is brought by the Sefer B'Tzel HaChokhmah, who says that maybe the Kavanah of the Zohar is not speaking specifically about taking words of Torah, but whenever there's any kind of a mitzvah performance, that there's an object of a mitzvah, there's like lulav, a tefillin, or tzitzis, or other chafetzim of mitzvah that your chaver has that you need in order to help you fulfill a mitzvah, and you ask them for that object. Or they have a bunch that are lying around their house that they don't necessarily use all the time, and you badge them, could you please sell me that extra pair of tefillin that you have? Because I really would like that pair of tefillin. So if it's an object of mitzvah, for mitzvah purposes, so maybe, normally, that's the sort of thing that would be encompassed in Lo Sachmon. And the Zohar is telling us that if it's a mitzvah object, then this would not be included in Lo Sachmon. That would be something that would be permissible. He asks a kasha on that, because there appears to be a Yerushalmi that says that every part of a Seres HaDibros corresponds to a part of Kriya Shema. Lo Sachmon applies to Uksav Tamam Zos Besecho Visharecha. So it would seem that the Yerushalmi is suggesting that even if you chomate a person's house for purposes of being able to affix a mezuzah, that would still be a violation of Lo Sachmon. And then he distinguishes, well, maybe that's only if the object itself is inherently as a mundane item like a house, you just want to do a mitzvah with it, so then that would still be subject to the violation of Lo Sachmon. But if the item is kulo kadosh, it's like a sefer Torah, it's tefillin, it's mezuzah, the item that you still want itself is not the house, but you want the mezuzah. And so then maybe Lo Sachmon maybe that's what the Zohar is saying, that Lo Sachmon wouldn't apply to such a case. So these are different suggestions as to how to understand the Zohar, but fundamentally the message of the Zohar is kinasofim ta bechachma, that the desire for Torah, even if a desire for a person's wealth would be something that would be improper, if not on a deraisa level, and just maybe on a divrei kabbalah level, or midas chasidus level, so there would be no such midas chasidus when it comes to desiring to grow in divrei Torah and to acquire the wisdom that somebody else has when it comes to divrei Torah. So I'll just end with the following observation, which is that I saw a nice little article, I think on Torah Web, from Yaakov Haber, who speaks about the fundamental problem of Lo Sachmon being a lack of being Samech B'chilko. So I was thinking about that a little bit, and it made me think of a possible pshat in Rashi and Parshas Re'eh, that just as a matter of perhaps homiletics, as a just a kind of a drasha b'alma, but we know that we have the two contradictory psukim in Parshas Re'eh, which is one pasuk says Ephes kiloya b'chayav yon, and the other pasuk says kiloya k'dalav yon mikarav ha'aretz. That the one pasuk says there'll always be aniyim, the other pasuk says there'll come a time in which there won't be any aniyim. So which one is it? So Rashi says kachel b'bizman she'osim mitzono shemakum kam bizman she'enosim mitzono shemakum. So I was thinking maybe that's the idea. That what does it mean? Bisman she'osim mitzono shemakom. Bisman she'osim mitzono shemakom is when people have the perspective that everything that you have is what you are meant to have, and everything that everybody else has is what they are meant to have. So when there is that perspective, and people are properly fulfilling the mitzvah of lo sachmod, that they're not desiring what belongs to anybody else, then Epes ki lo yebecha evyon, there won't be this notion of ta'iv, of evyon, of desiring anything, because everybody will be fulfilling a Kadosh Baruch Hu's will of being sameach bechelkom, of being happy and satisfied with what they have, so that they will not be in violation of lo sachmon. We should all merit to be sameach bechelkenu at all times. So my next trip is scheduled Monday, February 22nd through Wednesday, February 24th. So I can give